Blog Talk Radio. Blog Talk Radio.
Generally, the Constitution is a charter of negative liberties. Says what the states can't do to you, says what the federal government can't do to you, but it doesn't say what the federal government or the state government must do on your behalf.
Fat on a rough road, riding high.
You didn't build that.
Through the mountains, climbing, twisting, turning further from my home.
Shut up your mouth with Obama. Shut up your mouth with Obama.
Be young, like a new moon rising, fear.
I've got a pen.
Through the rain and lightning, wandering out into this great unknown.
Yes, we can.
And I don't want no one to cry, but tell them if I don't survive, I was born free.
I've got a pen.
I was born free.
And I've got a phone.
Mr. Gorbachev, tear down this wall.
Like the grandest canyon, wild, like an untamed stallion. If you can't see my heart, you must be blind.
What difference at this point does it make?
You can knock me down and watch me bleed, but you can't keep no chains on me. I was born free.
I've got a pen.
Welcome aboard the program. I am your captain for this two-hour pleasure cruise, where we are dedicated to the fight and the preservation of freedom, regardless of that cost. We do not concern ourselves with the cost. Look, we're not buying a used car here. This is our freedom, damn it. And freedom ain't cheap, but we can afford it. It's tyranny that we cannot afford. All right, you want to be a part of the program tonight? Don't be shy. 646-716-7978, or you can join the captain's chat room. Now, remember, if you do want to talk tonight, make sure you... ...my show last night. I still had a whole bunch of stuff to actually cover, but I missed it because I was just... I blew up. I lost it. Well, it's just the kind of guy I am. I'm German. Blonde hair, blue-eyed kraut, just the way we are. I didn't invent the Germans. I just know how we work. And we can only take so much. And once we get to that point, that's it. Boom. We blast off. Well, again, if you want to join the discussion tonight, the number is 646-716-7978, and make sure you press the number 1. Or you can ask your questions in the chat room. Now, you know that I am terrible with that chat room. But tonight, I will make a conscious effort to actually look into it once in a while. Your questions are important. Now, remember... If you have a story out there where you have been tyrannized in any way, I don't care by who, by the courts, by the law enforcement, by your doctors, by your teachers, by your Walmart greeters, it doesn't matter. The government, FBI, CIA, it doesn't matter. If you have been tyrannized in any way, if you don't contact me, you have to contact someone. You have to get your story out there. But if you want to contact me, I'm very easy to get a hold of. Go on Facebook and just type in the captain. I think I'm under news personality. I'm right there. You give me a message, we'll bring you on. Look, your voice is important. If you don't use it, it's worthless. So let your voice be heard. All right, now let's bring our very special guest on board here and get into some battle mode. Because I'm ready to go. I'm hot. I'm really hot tonight. So let me make sure I get the right button here. Nanine, my dear, can you hear me?
I can hear you. So nice to hear you.
All right. I'm glad to have you on. Look, first of all, Nanine, I really want to thank you really very much for coming on this program tonight. And I also have to apologize to you for misunderstanding your case, because I don't know who sent you to me. I don't know if it was Raquel or Michael, but when I get people wanting to come on, it's always a family member that has been victimized from family court. It's never been an attorney. So anyway, I want to apologize for that.
No need. That's common. It's people usually think that I guess it's rare. I'm surprised that it's rare for an attorney to speak, but that happens a lot.
Well, I've had a lot of attorneys on this show, but they've always been, you know, either, you know, speaking about their client, but they've never been in your position. So, I mean, I think this is going to be probably, without a doubt, probably the most educational show I've ever done, because we have
somebody who's
been inside. You're an insider. You're right there. You are an attorney in family court, so we're going to get a much better perspective on here. So, again, thank you very much for coming on. Now, before we get into this, into your story, which is very compelling, by the way, take a brief moment here. Tell the audience just a little bit about yourself, what kind of law you practice, how long you practice, and then we're going to dive right into your story, because this case is definitely one for the books.
Okay. I practiced law for nearly 15 years, and I became an attorney specifically for the purpose of, because I wanted to help victims of domestic violence and to represent children who were caught in really, really difficult circumstances. So
right.
For most of my 15-year practice, I dedicated, I practiced almost exclusively family law, and I dedicated a significant portion of my practice to representing victims of domestic violence. I also took cases where there were allegations of sexual abuse by a parent, and I also handled cases where the state had removed a child for based on allegations of abuse and neglect, and I represented parents in those cases.
Okay. Now, my first question before we get into your story here. Now, I know, I want to know, and I'm more than likely sure my audience wants to know, are these decisions in family court more often or less often pre-decided before anyone even shows up? Because I've noticed a pattern with all of my guests, and from their perspective and an outsider's perspective like me, it certainly seems that way. Is there a lot of that?
That's all I know, is that the judge makes up his or her mind, and then it's that
then the court proceeds. Yeah,
they proceed and they pick and choose the witnesses they'll hear from and the testimony and the evidence they'll take, if they take any at all, based on how does it already fit into their paradigm of what is going on in the case. It is absolutely backwards. It's a complete upturn. They've turned the system upside down.
Well, I want to know now. I'm not a lawyer. But if a judge or a cop in any case, they come to your house and want to arrest you for something, and you say, no, I've got the proof right here that I'm not guilty of this, and they don't choose to use it, anybody, is that – what is that considered? Is that obstruction of justice because you're refusing to see the evidence? What exactly is that by refusing
to
see the evidence?
Well, when a judge does it, it's called judicial discretion. That's what it's called.
Uh-oh. Yeah, but I mean, in reality, though, isn't that supposed to be obstruction of justice? I mean, for, you know, a dummy like me, that's what it seems like.
I have a big problem with the whole idea of obstruction of justice to begin with, because the idea that you can be forced to do anything for the government has always been a problem for me. I think if you want to produce evidence and you have it, then you should bring it forward. Obviously, if they're aware of evidence and there's a subpoena issued and you don't respond to that order, that's contempt. I don't know that it's obstruction of justice. But in court, you know, judges have, you know, absolute discretion. So if they say, I'm not going to see that evidence or I'm not going to hear from that witness, that's considered, oh, well, that's just part of their job.
I mean, because, see, most of the guests that come on here.
I'm not saying it's right. I'm saying that's what they're doing.
Right. No, exactly. No, because most of the guests that come on here, they have got and they send it to me. They send me their evidence. I've seen it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, and they've got a treasure trove of evidence, and I'm looking at it, but the judge refuses to look at it. So, I mean, that's
Well, here's the question I ask all the time. courts, judges have taken oath to be impartial in their fact finding. And if a judge can make her up its can issue a decision without ever looking at a single shred of evidence, just based on whatever documents were submitted, you know, through the pleading process or, you know, through filings, then how can that court claim to be unbiased? If they didn't look at any evidence, they clearly made up their mind beforehand and just ruled based on their personal opinion or their own sort of perspective. Without evidence, no judgment issued by a court is worthy of our consideration or, you know, the weight that we are ordered to give it.
And here's another problem. Now, yeah, you as an attorney, you can file a complaint, but there is no governing body over judges. You know what I'm saying? So
we have a judiciary commission here in Louisiana that's supposed to oversee the judiciary, but it's who's in there, right? And I want to say that we have tremendous problems in our courts, and it's destroying our country. It is an absolute it's the cancer on our government, on our democracy, and it's eating this democracy from the inside out. But those problems didn't come from a vacuum. They come from us, from the community. These people grow up with you. They go to school with you, and some of them become judges, and they bring these values with them. And this need, this absolute desire to be friends with powerful people and to fawn and submit in order to gain some sort of favor is rampant. And this is who we're, these are the kind of people who are attracted to be in these positions of oversight. They are judge wannabes, or they are judge, they are enamored of judges and what they do. And so they are very protective of them. They are not there to protect the public. They are there to protect those judges. And that's exactly what they do.
Right. Exactly. And, you know, a lot of and you hit on something, a lot of guests, both men and women. It's not just women. It's not just men. But whatever family has the most friends in the justice system, whoever has the most money seems to win. Whether they're the mother or whether they're the father. And it doesn't matter what parent beat up the children, what parent beat up the spouse. That part never even comes in. I can't tell you how many abusive parents are granted full custody of their children. And the one, either the mother or the father who broke away from it, they can't even see their children anymore. They're not allowed to. If they do, they go to jail.
Well, yeah, that's actually that's becoming the norm, and there's lots of studies that show that that victims of domestic violence, or in cases where a child is being abused, those parents who are trying to protect that child are much more likely to lose custody, as in not even have any form of custody, not even have visitation rights, than other parents, because the courts do not, and this is another problem that's cultural with us. Don't understand domestic violence. They don't understand what it looks like, and they don't understand how adept batterers are at manipulating that system. So we're constantly looking for the perfect victim, and there are none, because the result of being battered and abused and intimidated and threatened for years and years and years, it does not create a highly stable, well-balanced individual that we expect them to be. And when these people come to court desperate for help, they're operating on an assumption that the court is there to help them. And when they rudely become aware of the fact that they are the ones that are going to be persecuted, prosecuted, jailed, and demeaned, they don't know how to respond to it. And often they respond in very destructive ways.
Well, yeah. I mean, you know, anger, something like that. I know me. You know, like I said before, I'm German, and I can only take so much, and something like that. Yeah, I would blow up, and that's what they want you to do, so they can use that against you. Oh, look,
absolutely.
See, you're this, you're that.
Well, batterers are very good at that as well. They are very good at manipulating people to lose their cool and capture that moment so that they can, present themselves as the victim themselves. They're very good at it.
No, they aren't. I hate to get off the subject, but we're gonna get into your story here. But I've got something I'm going to send to you because I'm also an actor, writer, and director, and I'm raising money now for my domestic violence film. And I cover the truth. I produce it in New York City. There wasn't one dry eye in the house. The men couldn't take it. The women could handle it, but the men, they all left. They would not look at me when they left the theater because they were all crying. And I show what the end result to domestic violence is, and that is somebody is going to die, either the abuser or the one who's abused. But that's the end result if it's not stopped. But I don't want to digress too much into that. But after the show, I will send that to you. But great. When did all of this trouble start? For you, I mean, was it just this one particular case that, you know, with the mother and the father from Mississippi and Louisiana, or have you had trouble with these judges in the past? How did all of a sudden this just happened? I mean,
well, I think that I had not endeared myself to. We only have two family court judges in my home parish, my own county, and I don't think that I had endeared myself to them because I would not. I resisted all of these inappropriate proceedings that I don't believe in, pretrial right. conferences that take place behind closed doors that really annoyed them, and I would take them up on appeal and not agree, not force my client to agree to things that they judge wanted them to agree to, but I absolutely knew wasn't necessarily what was best for my client, and certainly they didn't want it, so they weren't exactly fond of me to begin with, but I respected them in my very idealistic kind of way. And right. In 2011 is when things actually sort of escalated. I had been handling a case for a couple of years before that with a mom who was trying to protect her two very young children. And like you said, I saw all the evidence, and it was, I wished I had that much evidence in most cases where there are allegations of abuse. There was so much evidence of the sexual what? Abuse of these two little girls. And the case was proceeding in Mississippi for jurisdictional reasons. And the mother came to me desperate because she couldn't get any of her attorneys to make the allegations and then put on her evidence. And so her children weren't being protected. And she was frustrated, and she didn't understand. And it had been going on for nearly a year, and she still hadn't had a trial with her evidence. And I couldn't help her in Mississippi, but eventually things worked out where I was able to actually get her a protective order in Louisiana that was somewhat helpful in protecting the children. And so for about a year and a half, the children did not have any contact with their abuser, and they thrived. They did wonderfully. And then as these things happened, the dad had been indicted. He got indicted for one count of child molestation by a Mississippi grand jury. And that while that was outstanding, he stayed away from the children, not because the courts wanted him to, but because we got a protective order. And then when that indictment was dismissed, ostensibly because, as we were told, the court believed that since there was a protective order in place and mom had sole custody pursuant to that, that they didn't have to prosecute him, and they were helping the child. They were sparing her that ordeal of having to go testify. But as it turned out, as soon as they dropped the indictment, which happens all the time, I told mom that that was a real risk. As soon as they dropped the indictment, here came dad right back again, and it was in Mississippi, and it just went, it immediately went badly, where mom was being threatened. She wanted to bring her evidence. She wanted to show her evidence. The court threatened her that she would lose all custody. And then at some point, the judge in Mississippi, Chancellor Deborah Gambrell, she issued an order. Now, this order came after a meeting in her chambers, which was supposed to be just a scheduling meeting where they picked dates for the trial that was pending on the allegations of abuse. And this order came out of this meeting. The mother's attorney was there, and the children's attorney, and I say that through the side of my mouth, and right. And then father's attorney were present. And there came this order where the father was allowed to have new visitation starting immediately. Like the meeting was on Wednesday. The father's visitation would start that Friday. It would be supervised, but in his home for a couple of weekends, and that was a home the children had been molested in previously and had not been in 2 years, and then it was going to be unsupervised. And this order affects custody, and mom was also assessed fees. She was ordered to pay $1,000 to the guardian ad litem, and not without a hearing, without any notice, nothing. And how comes this order? Now, it's completely illegal under Mississippi law. I'm not licensed in Mississippi, but I'm an attorney. I can read the law. I have case law in Mississippi that says it's completely illegal. And the oldest child was so traumatized at being told that she would have to go to her father's house that she sat down and she wrote this journal. And it was she was young. She was still under 10 at the time. But she wrote this journal, and she just described all of this confusion in her, and how much she loved her dad, but how afraid she was of him, and how she wanted him to stop doing what she was doing, what he was doing, and she thought it was her responsibility to make him stop, but she was so afraid of him. It just could break your heart.
Right.
And we took that journal. The mom took that journal to the police, because they were allegedly still had the case, the charges open, looking for more evidence. She took it to them. She brought it to the guardian ad litem and asked the guardian, said, here's more evidence of this abuse. And she took it to her own attorney in Mississippi and said, please file this with the court. And they all refused to do anything with it, up to and including her attorney. So then she brought it to me.
Well, these guardian ad litems, I hate to interrupt you here, but these guardian ad litems, I mean, what really is the point? Because they don't work for the children. Most of them
don't.
They
make money. On paper, it's a great idea. The court wants someone who has a legal training, is educated, understands the law, and who can give them what's supposed to be a perspective that doesn't favor the mother or the father. In reality, these attorneys have absolutely zero training, and they get on these lists to get these easy money cases.
It
they
is.
Get paid
it's good.
Exorbitant amounts of money, and they're friends with all these people. They don't want to piss off the judge. They're friends with the attorneys of either the mother or the father or both. And I think they all get together in back rooms and sort of flip a coin on, okay, which one, who gets the gal this case? And there is absolutely, this gal, we had actually two gals in this case. The first one never met with the children. Well, I might have met with the children once or twice. But with a therapist, never looked at any of the mother's evidence, wouldn't even take it, wouldn't even accept it from her, and never spoke with the children's actual therapists that were treating them, none of the teachers, none of the witnesses, didn't speak to anyone, and just completely dismissed the abuse as made up, even though he made no investigation, and had no training to do that kind of investigation in any case. Even if he'd wanted to do the investigation, he didn't have the training. Second one wasn't even qualified under Mississippi law to be that kind of gal.
Right. In this particular case, was the what we're talking about, was the father, did he have, and you're right. I mean, these guys, I mean, there's an exorbitant amount of evidence. I just had a guest on last week where the husband put her into the hospital and broke her ribs several times. But the court wouldn't want to look at that. But did this guy in this case, did the father have, did he have a lot of money? Did he have a lot of pull? Was his family, is that how he got away with this? Or is he just smooth talker?
I think he was definitely not a smooth talker. There was some rumor, his dad apparently had been sheriff in a neighboring county. And this is Mississippi, very rural. So the counties are very rural. Even the big cities are rural. And so there was that he had this connection. He had good money. He had a lot of property, right, a lot of land. So he had far more money than mom did to fight this battle.
Right.
But I think, honestly, that the biggest thing in his favor was this whole idea that that you can tell definitively when a child, whether or not a child has been manipulated to say something that isn't true, and in those instances when it is true. There's that thing called parental alienation syndrome, and I'm not saying that parents don't engage in alienating behavior of the children, because I've certainly seen that, and I've certainly been in cases where I've seen the other parent engaging in it, and I've even had to caution my clients about that. I won't represent them if we're going to use the kids as this tool. I'm not going to do that.
Right.
But that is a different animal than this idea that somehow you can some point determine that a child has been coerced or manipulated or brainwashed to believe that the other parent is abusing them, and then therefore it none of it happens. Because what happens is there's no way to really do that. If you read the literature, if you're familiar with the research, you realize that there is absolutely no way to definitively ever determine yes or no whether a child has actually, not forensically, you know, unless you have the actual video or the perpetrator actually admits to it, there's no way to definitively know. So it's always an educated guess, and when you can't prove it, the decision by the court should be, unfortunately, there is insufficient evidence here for me to find that this child has been abused by this person such that I can deprive this parent of a right to contact with the child. But it doesn't mean it's not true. It just means that they couldn't prove it. And the other side of it is that if you do have that evidence, when people apply this theory of alienation, it turns all of that evidence that would otherwise be evidence of abuse into evidence of alienation based on this false premise that it has been ultimately determined that the child is lying, which is impossible to do.
Right.
And so this is what goes, as soon as a parent, whether it's a mother, I've seen it goes both ways. But as soon as a parent alleges sexual abuse, the court immediately becomes hostile. They are immediately disbelieving, and they immediately start treating that parent as if they are a liar and they are trying to manipulate the court.
Why is that? Because, I mean, I can't tell you how many guests have that I've had on here that have been falsely accused, both men and women, of molesting their children. Why is that? Why does the court not take this seriously?
How do we know that they were falsely accused?
Well, just by what they're telling me, but I mean, I just see a pattern where the court
You can't base a pattern on an unknown, because the problem is we don't ever really know. I don't know, and my clients come to me and say my child is being abused. The first thing I always ask them is, how do you know? Do you have any evidence? Because just like Tom Cruise said in A Few Good Men, it doesn't matter what I believe. It only matters what I can prove, or at least I used to believe that. Now it doesn't matter what I can prove. But the point is you're always, when it is forensic in nature, when you're looking backwards, when you have an outcome and you're trying to figure out how did you get there, you're looking backwards. It is always about making subjective guesses. Hopefully they're educated. Hopefully they're as objective as possible. But in the end, there is still a degree of uncertainty in that outcome. And child molesters, pedophiles, predators do not wear signs, and they don't go out of their way to draw attention to the fact that they have this preference for sex with children, and it appears under different circumstances for different people. So some of your neighbors are pedophiles, and you would never guess it. I had someone once tell me that someone was, you know, my neighbor was falsely accused of sexually molesting his own children. And I said, well, how do you know it wasn't true? And she was horrified. She looked at me with her mouth agape and said, well, of course it wasn't true. I've known him. He's been in my neighborhood for years, and he goes to church every Sunday.
That don't mean
and
nothing.
And I thought, can we talk about priests who have that preference and sought out that position so that they could get that mantle of trust and gain access to your children? And what's the easiest way to have easy access to a child if you have that preference?
I've also seen it on the other side, where just an allegation and the parent is guilty with no evidence whatsoever. They just say, well, okay, that's the allegation. You did this, that you're guilty.
Equally unfair, because these cases are very difficult to prove. But we're talking about in very, very important questions, and getting it wrong is a huge tragedy. They're not going to avoid that tragedy in every instance, but because it does result in a huge tragedy, it is even more incumbent upon us and the system to rely on the rules of procedure and evidence to ensure that, to the best of our ability, we get as close to the truth as possible, so that we don't sever a relationship between a good parent and a child based on a false allegation. But on the other side, we don't condemn a child to this life of being a sex toy for a parent because we refuse to believe that it's possible. We have to base these decisions on law and procedure and evidence, and that is not what is going on in our courts today.
Well, what is the real procedure? I mean, obviously there's a psychiatrist. They got to be checked out by a doctor. I mean, what procedures are there and what are they not doing? I mean, are they doing any of the procedures? What should they be doing?
Oh. Well, I think what's important is that no matter what procedure is done, it is up to the court, right? The judge is supposed to ensure that the process by which the evidence comes into that courtroom is appropriate, that it's valid, so that the information that judge is receiving has some reliability and some validity. But what is happening is that this to me, I think, is what gets missed by many because they're so caught in the system. There is what we call a cottage industry around the family court system. So there are all these psychiatrists and psychologists and professionals and parenting coordinators and, you know, parenting teachers, and they all hold themselves out as someone who can help these parents get through this difficult situation. So, and they all cost money. So the court, you know, orders these procedures, like, well, let's get them evaluated, let's have a custody evaluation, let's send them to this therapist, and let's send them to that. You do all that, and it costs thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars. And then once all that's done, and there's no more money to be spent, or they can't figure out any more other way to spend money, and they have a trial. And the judge looks at none of that, or looks at whatever he or she wants to look at that already fits into their idea of what the outcome should be, and then they make a decision. I have case after case where the court itself will appoint an expert, and the parents will spend thousands on that expert's evaluation, and then the expert will come to court, say something the court doesn't like or doesn't believe in, and say, I'm not even going to put any weight to that expert's testimony. And everybody's like, but it's your expert. Yeah, but I can do that. I'm a judge. I have that discretion.
Wow. Well, I got to take I missed it. I'm 4 minutes past time, but I got to do a quick 30-second station identification. So hold on, Nanine. We'll be right back.
You're listening to The Captain on the Freedom for All Network. Simulcast on Reach Out America, Opening the Vortex. Produced by World Integrity News Network. Call-in lines are always open. 646-716-7978. When injustice becomes law, resistance becomes duty.
Yes, we are the brave. Yes, we are the
brave. And we're back, and we are talking with Nanine McCool. She was a family court attorney that was disbarred for standing up for your rights and her rights and everybody's rights. And you know what? That's one thing that, you know, really bothers me about a lot of this stuff is the American people. And that's why I bring, I bring guests on this show, because this show was not designed to do this. I had no intentions of getting involved with any of this stuff when I started the show. That was not I'm not an interviewer. I never have been. My show was not designed to do that. But I read one little story about a girl named Justina Pelletier, and I blew a gasket. And I immediately got on the horn. I started calling people. I started researching, and I found out more in one afternoon than our Shamestream Media has done since we first heard about Justina Pelletier 2 years ago. Well, you know, I'm trying to get the American people, because a lot of people, they have no clue. They have no idea what is actually happening, not in our courts. We could be having, like you said before, you know, one of your neighbors could be a pedophile. Well, one of your neighbors could have, you know, the same problems that, you know, a lot of your clients had, and you just don't know. That's what I'm trying to bring, not really awareness. I hate that word, awareness, because if you're not aware that there's problems, you got to crawl back under your rock and stay there till your brain is fully developed. I like to bring acknowledgement. Because once you acknowledge that there's a problem, then you become proactive. But people don't want to they don't want to acknowledge it, because then they're going to have to get their fat butts off the couch and actually do something. And, you know, this is, you know, people like you and the people that I work with all the time, I mean, we're fighting day and night. This is all I do now. I mean, this is it. This is what I do. I'm fighting for people.
And it's so necessary because, like you said, there are so few media outlets that will cover this. They are so, they're owned, I suppose. They're owned by the powerful people who are all friends with more powerful people. But it's so necessary what you do, because it gives one of the few places where people can actually get on and say, this is happening to me. It's real. And, you know, you should care, because this is not just me and my family. This is your country. This is your justice system, and it will come looking for you one day.
Right. You know, I know I sound like a broken record, but I preach this on my show all the time, that when you attack one American, you attack us all. Whether they are directly across the street or, you know, they're, you know, 3,000 miles away from you. You know,
right.
We're one big family here. We don't have to like each other. We can hate each other. But you attack
right.
one of us. You're attacking us all.
We have to love the principles upon which this country
right.
was founded. We don't have to like each other. But if you want to really believe and call yourself an American with any amount of validity, you have
right.
to care about the principles upon which this country was founded. And one of those most fundamental principles is the rule of law and the freedom of speech and expression and association. And the family
Thank
court
you.
Violates all of those on a daily basis with absolutely no, just no reservation whatsoever. And people go along with it. It drives me crazy. You know, I'm going to jump up on my soapbox here. That
go ahead.
Even the discussion about, you know, the Shimoni kids, which has gotten a lot of national attention, the discussion is always, well, I don't think the judge should have done that. Oh, I think it was okay because, and my, what I want to scream at all of them is say, what about her authority? Why isn't anyone asking from where did she get the authority to tell three children that they have to have a good relationship with their father, and if not, she's going to put them in prison, on jail, in kid prison? And no one asked that question, and that is the first question everyone should ask anytime they hear that a judge did or didn't do something. Where did they get
right.
that authority from? What is their obligation under the law? Because it doesn't matter what you and I would do if we were personally able to do whatever we wanted. In this country, when someone acts against another in the name of this country, they must do that pursuant to specific authority. And that authority only goes so far, and it's defined through the Constitution. And when they exceed that, we should all stand up and say, I don't care if I personally agree with you. The Constitution says you don't have the right to do that to someone else.
Well, Done. You know, I mean, nobody's – we've got enough laws on the books. The problem is we're
oh
not following them. And the biggest one that we're not following is our Constitution. I got it right here in my hands. I never leave home without it. I've always
right,
got a pocket.
Right,
carry
my pocket.
I've always got one.
Yep,
you know, but,
too.
I mean, it is right down here. It is black and white. Now, it is very easy to read this document and understand it, but the problem is school teachers don't teach it because they don't know
yep.
it. And if they do say
yep.
anything about it, oh, it's racist, it's homophobe, it's, you know, it's misogynist, it's all these other buzzwords. But
you're
right.
Though. And the important difference between the Constitution and the laws of this country are that the Constitution are limitations on the federal government and by operation of the 14th Amendment, the state government. They are not limitations upon the people. They are limitations upon the government. The gazillion, million, billion laws that we now have in this country are all ways for this government to control us. And
exactly.
every law we enact is another shave off another degree of our freedom. And frankly, we
mm-hmm.
are not free by any stretch
nope.
of the imagination anymore. And
nope.
and when you walk into family court, you have just transported yourself into North Korea, because that's the kind of justice you would get in North Korea is the same kind of justice you're going to get in our family court.
No, absolutely. You hit it right, hit the nail right on the head. We are not free. People think that we are. But,
they don't know what free
is.
They have no concept of it because they've never actually been free. And because they're so used to submitting, well, you just do what that police officer says and you'll be just fine. That's not what a free person does. A free person says, you know, I'm going to live free or I'm going to die. And if that means
right.
that when I stand up to this police officer and say, you know what, officer, you don't have a right to stop me, then if you die because you do that, then the whole country should stand up and say, I don't care if he had dreadlocks, was
right.
couldn't speak the language. I don't care what he looked like or what prejudicial box, you know, racial profile you can stick him into. You violate his rights and you violated my rights, and it can't
right.
be allowed. And we don't.
No.
We are so willing to let other people just. We want to blame people. We're losing our way. It's frightening.
No, you are. And, you know, a lot of people, they think that I'm anti-cop. I'm not anti-cop. We all look
at
the police department. But I'm anti-corruption. And you're right.
Absolutely.
You know, if a cop is over here making up their own laws, and I've seen, I don't know, countless videos of cops just making up laws and then
Absolutely.
Trying to force you to follow them. And it is
yep.
not only your right, But it is your obligation, your duty, your responsibility as a free citizen to stand up not only for yourself, but for everybody else, because the very moment that you surrender your rights, oh, just, you know, let the nice officer do his thing and you could work it out in court. No, you're not going to work it out in court.
No, you're not.
But when you want to surrender your rights, that's fine. You can surrender your rights, but keep in the forefront of your mind, when you surrender your rights, you're surrendering 325 million other Americans' rights. And it makes it very difficult for people like you and me, Nanine, and my audience to stand up for our rights, because too many people are just too easy to surrender theirs. And that's what's really, I think that's what's really missing. And, you know, say anything and, oh, now you're a domestic terrorist because you talk about it. I'm not a domestic terrorist. I'm a free man. I'm an American.
I'm a domestic patriot.
Exactly. There you go.
Well, I believe in the people.
Right.
Right. And, I get it. You know, we don't all see eye to eye. We all have very different perspectives and different points of view. But that's why we came to this country, so that we could all be free to pursue our own different points of view and live according to our own values, obviously within some parameters. But we have become obsessed with winning and imposing our own values on everyone else. And that is not the principles upon which America was founded. We have to understand this. Even in I don't care what party you call it, Republicans and Democrats, whoever, they're always talking about, well, we have to get those people to do these things because that's the right thing to do. Well, that is not the discussion that we were having 220-some-odd years ago, whatever it's been, 30 years. We were having the discussion of we want to be free to live our own lives, to be self-responsible for ourselves and our future, and we want to be free to do that. Succeed or fail, we want to do it on our own terms, and that was the spirit that created this country. But we've lost that spirit because we've become lazy and comfortable and safe. I'm so sick of people saying, in the interest of security. Americans don't care more about security than they do about their own freedom.
I hate that. But you know what? If the teachers would, and I grew up in the school district, so I'm going to hack on the teacher. They were all around me. I'm sorry, but I got – my mom just retired a couple of years ago. I got teachers from kindergarten all the way up to deans at major universities. I know the mentality of a teacher, and they're really not teaching for whatever reason, I don't know. But if the American people were to just simply understand and learn the events leading up to the Revolutionary War, first of all, they'd understand why we have a Declaration of Independence, and we would also understand why we have our Constitution. And if you can't tell that, if you understand the events leading up to our Revolutionary War, the first time we got our freedom, and we're going to need to have another one because we've lost it. If they understand this, they'll know, hey, wait a minute, this is the same exact thing that happened 240 years ago History keeps repeating itself. The only thing that has changed has been the date. But tyranny will always be here until we stand up against it.
But, the difference now is that we have 9 kings and then all their petty kings, because the third branch of government is absolutely far more powerful than our executive branch or our legislative branch. You can't.
Right.
Ever since they declared themselves immune from any kind of, for acting maliciously or outside the scope of their authority, ever since Stump v. Sparkman in 1978, they have been the ruling class in this country.
And you're right. That never should have happened. How we got to that point, I don't know. But you know what?
Well,
we've been actually
the wolf's in charge of the hen house. That's how we got there. The judges made that decision because, how convenient. It means that they don't have to be accountable for anything they do, and now they can use their power, their incredibly immense power, to satisfy every personal whim they have.
I don't think any human being living in this country should be immune from any kind of prosecution. Look, if you're guilty, you're guilty. It's just the way it is.
What does we the people mean if the judges are not responsible to us? How can it be a government for the people, by the people, and of the people, if there's this whole section of people who get to say, well, not me, not so much me.
Right.
There's a whole class. And when you put on a black robe and all of a sudden you're some superpower. It does. It's completely at odds with the principles upon which this country is founded. And I wish people would stop looking up to judges and being so in awe of them and realize that so many of them are narcissistic, crazy, insecure, just terrified little children trapped in adult bodies. And they go run for that robe because you can't lose an argument when you wear a black robe.
No, you're right. And I swear to God that Justice Roberts, I have no absolute proof, so this is just mere speculation. But with that Obamacare, I don't know if they got pictures of him with little boys in cowboy suits or they paid him off. But something happened. He did not follow the rule of law. I don't know what the hell.
Well, that's the most recent decision on same-sex marriage, which was a complete – I don't have a problem with same-sex marriage myself personally, but that's a status. Marriage is a status that's provided through the state, and it's a preferred status that people say, well, I'm going to give some people special consideration if they're in this class. And it has traditionally been within the purview of the state to decide those preferences and who can marry and who can't. And now the Supreme Court says, well, we think that, you know, it's, y'all just don't know what you're doing,
see,
and we're going to close our eyes.
No, you're right, and people don't understand. They think that that's a law. There is no law. The Supreme Court can't make law. They just gave their opinion. That's all they
gave
can
their
do
opinion.
Is give an opinion. They gave their opinion on a non-existent law, and people think that it's law now. It's not.
Well, it is law, actually, according to our Constitution. When the United States Supreme Court rules on and says that something is unconstitutional, they undid a law. They didn't create a law. They undid a law and prevent the states or other entities from creating laws that can create this outcome. And like I said, I personally agree with them, but I disagree with the legal argument upon which they based this conclusion. It was completely inappropriate. It did violence to our Constitution, and it's a bad decision.
Right. No,
it
I agree wholeheartedly
go.
With you. It's not that I have a problem with gay
marriage or couples or any of that. I don't.
It's the procedure that they follow.
It's
Exactly. You know,
the legal argument that they concocted and twisted and forced to fit their what they wanted with the best of intentions, right? Best of intentions. It doesn't matter if you have good intentions.
Intentions don't matter. The road to hell is paved with good intentions.
Kidding. It's true. Literally true.
And another thing we were talking about, you know, the people, the government's doing a really good job of dumbing down the American people, because if you're smart,
They're going along with the dumbing down, right? You can't dumb somebody down if they don't want to be dumbed down.
Right.
I have a big problem with saying, oh, it's the government's fault. Yeah, they don't make an effort, but we could.
Yeah, right. No, exactly. If you're going to allow somebody to tyrannize you, well, you got no one to blame but yourself.
Yeah, exactly.
You can't blame the government for doing this. No, I'm with you 100%. But it is high time. My theory is that I think the reason why people are lazy is because once you take responsibility for your own life, you have to be accountable, and people don't want to be accountable.
Well,
so if something bad happens,
what's that word?
The A word. I got to put a P in
the A word. That word.
But you know, they think to themselves, "Well, wait a minute. If something goes wrong here, oh, now I got to blame myself, and I got to be at fault here." No. It's the government that did it, so I can blame the government now. So nobody has.
They told me it was okay. They told me I could do this. They didn't make me do anything else. Yeah, we have lost what it means to really be an American, at least the way our founding fathers looked at being an American and our founding mothers, you know, that were out there and acknowledged.
And I really think we've actually been losing our freedom ever since we got it. And now we're just in hyperspace. I mean, it is almost – this ball is rolling downhill. And, shy of another revolutionary war, and I hate to bring that up because I'm trying to stop this war before it happens. But, I mean, I'm smart enough to, you know, see the inevitable. Is there another way that we could solve this problem? Because we know we're not going to get people off the couch. They're going to stay there, and they're going to be lazy. They're not angry yet. They need to get angry. But I don't know how to do it.
I think that to get a revolution, you kind of have to have the same sort of momentum and the same mass, the critical mass, to get that rolling. But rather than you know, it doesn't have to be a violent revolution. It simply could be a revolution of awareness and a revolution of idealism and a revolution of perspective. We could at some point just peacefully say, we've kind of had enough, and we're not going to listen to you guys, and we're not going to continue to go along with this. We're going to protest. We are going to stand up with every citizen we know who is being abused and is treated by our own government, and we're not going to allow it to go on. But I have to say this, you know, because I'm going to get accused of being, I don't know, a communist or a socialist or something, and I'm not. I believe in freedom. I believe in the right to go out and earn a living and keep what you earn. But at the same time, I don't believe that what it means to be an American is to go out and earn as much money as you possibly can and have the biggest house and a car full garage and just completely focus on financial wealth at the expense of everyone
greed.
Around you and your country. Well, we've been taught that greed isn't greed. It's capitalism, and capitalism is good. So we don't even have the right word for it.
Bad greed. Greed
is greed.
Yeah.
Everything within reason. It's absolutely important to say I have to take care of myself. I have to take care of my family, and I want to have some sense of, you know, safety and security in my own home, and I want to have some comfort in my life. I get that, but we have become no end in sight. It's never enough. It's a treadmill, and everything gets sacrificed to the more money, more stuff, bigger, more.
Right.
We sacrifice everything for that.
I don't have a problem with, you know, people wanting to earn a good living, but when you are blocking somebody else from, you know, just earning a life-sustaining living so you could get more, that's what I hate right there. You can't block.
And even that, I don't know. I think, yeah, it's fine if you want to be wealthy, but not at the expense of your country, not at the expense of the principles upon which your country was founded. And if you're too busy working in some profession that doesn't allow you the time to stop and be aware of what's going on around you, to be involved in your community, and to reach out and help the people who are being abused by your own government, then you have taken this, and we've done that. As Americans, what should come first before money, before prosperity, should be the health and of our government and the principles that we're founded upon, because that's what ensures our prosperity. And we are destroying it. By the very act of saying that prosperity is all that matters, we are going to absolutely guarantee that none of us has the opportunity for prosperity that our founding fathers tried to give us. Because you have to protect the principles upon which all that was founded, and we don't anymore. We don't understand what our freedoms are. We think we have to ask permission to exercise our freedoms. People who keep saying, can I do this? I'm saying, don't you understand what your First Amendment is? Don't you understand what your Fourth Amendment is? Yeah, but can I do it here? Okay, well, there's this thing called, if you want to do it and it's your right to do it, do it. But be prepared to accept the consequences of doing it, because that's what freedom is.
Well,
you accept the consequences.
No, you're absolutely right. And these colleges have these cockamamie free speech zones. What the hell is that?
I know. What the hell is that?
A free speech zone is anywhere in the United States.
Yes.
I don't care if you're in the lowest valley or the top of the top, the highest mountain. If you're in the United States of America, you have freedom of speech, period.
Well, here's the thing. Everyone on the planet has the freedom to speak. But in America, we're supposed to be protected from being punished by our government for exercising that right. I think that's an important distinction. Because by definition...
ourselves. We don't even have to punish ourselves anymore. We're doing it to ourselves.
Yeah,
that's what
I agree.
You know, I mean,
we're doing it to ourselves.
But, I mean, when colleges are doing that, these are people. These are citizens doing that. The government's not involved in this. And this is what...
Right. And they're teaching something, though. They're teaching something indirectly, right? You have to have this is a place where I can speak freely, but as soon as I step out of it, where am I? Am I not in a free speech zone? Right. We teach things all the time that I think people don't think hard enough about. I think they actually believe that, you know, they can speak freely, but only... My favorite argument about free speech is when someone says something and then you respond and disagree with them, and they say, "Well, I'm exercising my right to free speech, and who are you to you're trying to keep me from exercising my free speech?" And I'm saying, "No, you know, your right to free speech is not doesn't guarantee your right that I'm going to agree with you or that I'm not going to tell
right.
you I disagree with you. I mean, that's yeah. the point of being speaking freely is to have a discussion." It's
exactly.
not that everybody else has to shut up. I mean, where does your right to speak begin and the other person's end? People just don't think. They don't want to be criticized. We have this huge aversion in this country to criticism. Why? Why are we so afraid of criticism? It's worse. Our founding fathers died to create freedom, and we won't even tolerate harsh words. It's,
right. You know, there's also the other flip side to that. People automatically, they have to criticize. There's almost,
yes.
it's the problem is there's too much criticism and there's not enough criticism. It's not, it's backwards. It's upside down. What you should be criticizing, you're not. When you should shut up and just listen so you could actually learn something, you're running off at your mouth. And that's another
well,
thing, too. It, you know,
well,
the hate,
I welcome okay. criticism, even if I think some of it is silly and just to the point to be critical. Like, I get that all the time on my Facebook. You know, I have trolls that, you know, go on my Facebook page. Mm-hmm. They're obsessed with me, and they just have, I don't
right.
know what that's about. And they have to be negative, and no matter what I do or say, it's always wrong. I don't care. I just as soon have, and I, you know, usually I don't delete those comments. If they're particularly abusive and nasty to others besides just me, I will delete them. But I'll leave them up because my thing is, it's just criticism. I don't have to take
mm-hmm.
it on. No one else can define me but me. If I choose to believe what that person is saying and I choose to define myself by their words, then that's my choice. But I don't have to. I don't
right.
have to take on everything. Someone, and I don't have to have everybody to like me and praise me. As a matter of fact, I would be very, very concerned if Judge Dawn Amaker and her group of very very completely moralist people that are around her thought I was an awesome person. I would be concerned about my own character.
Right, because that would mean you're in, you know, you're in cahoots with them.
I took a wrong turn somewhere.
All right, we got to do another quick 25-second station identification, and I'm on time this time, so I'm not going to get
right.
into we'll be right back. You're listening to The Captain on the Freedom for All Network. Simulcast on Reach Out America, Opening the Vortex. Produced by World Integrity News Network. Call-in lines are always open. 646-716-7978. When injustice becomes law, resistance becomes duty.
Yes, we are the brave. Yes, we are the brave.
And we're back, and we are talking to Naneen McCool. Now, Naneen. We had mentioned something, and I want to get this out here, you know, about freedom of speech and, you know, and all of that. They've got this thing now that if you say anything, you know, people are also, they're very hypersensitive. If you say anything, oh, that's hate speech. Well, first of all, I don't believe in hate speech. Even, you know, kill cracker babies, you know, 10 seconds out of
mm-hmm.
the room. There is no such thing as hate speech. You can hate the speech, but it is not hate speech. You have to love the idea that they have the right to say it without persecution. And that persecution does not only mean the government doesn't have the right to persecute, but that means the citizens don't have
right.
the right to persecute. And people don't understand that this Constitution is not just for the government. It's for the citizens. It's for law enforcement. It's for everybody. It doesn't matter what your occupation is. You could be a judge, you could be a Walmart greeter, you could be anybody. It's for you, it's for everybody, and that's what people just simply, for whatever reason, don't want to understand, or it's too much for them,
well,
the brain smaller today, or something, I don't know.
I think, you know, that we had the best of intentions in enacting a lot of legislation that brought more equality in our society. I am of the opinion that racism is still a credible problem in this country, and that most people would deny being racist, but in fact aren't willing to look at themselves and see what ideas and beliefs might in fact be racist. I think we have a real problem with racism in the country, and I think racism is one of the stupidest ideas I've ever heard, and it makes absolutely no scientific sense.
Well, as long as you've got two people on Earth that are different colors, one of them is going to I hate the other one because they're a different color. That's human beings.
Well,
that's
and I think I think it's an argument for why racism is ridiculous, is that it's sort of the human condition to want to group people according to something. And if you can't distinguish them based on skin color or eye color or hair color, you're going to find something. You know, the shape of their nose, the size of their head, you're going to come up with something. But the point is when this country has a terrible history of treating African Americans, you know, they were enslaved for 300 years. It's only been a couple of generations. And we've done a lot of good with the civil rights movement, and I believe in that. But I believe they've gone too far. I believe that the government should not absolutely be allowed to discriminate based on skin color. But individuals should. This is a free country. You are free to be a bigot if that's what you choose, because it is free. I don't have to associate with you. I don't have to like you. I don't have to talk to you. But I, as a citizen, free to believe what I believe, am not free to tell you to shut up. And I absolutely have a problem with all of these laws about hate speech, because it is speech. And so I think our government should not be allowed to discriminate, because it's supposed to represent everyone. But as for individuals, if they want to get up and put swastikas and the Confederate flag all around their house, I will just turn my head as I drive by.
Well, I also think that the word discrimination has 325 million different meanings, meaning everybody in this country seems to have their own meaning of what is discriminatory and what isn't. Now, how can you legislate what is discriminatory and what isn't? I mean,
well,
you
define it pretty clearly in the law, and I can't, you know, I'm not so good that I can reproduce that off the top of my head, but essentially it is treating someone less favorably or more favorably than another group based on some characteristic that you're not allowed to discriminate on skin color.
It also goes into what you talked about earlier. How can you prove that they are actually doing that? You know, how can you prove
be quite challenging. Absolutely. Sometimes it's blatant. Sometimes, you know, it is obvious what's going on, but it is often difficult to prove. And when you're doing that to a private employer, right, I disagree. I think a private employer should be, you know, allowed to discriminate. The government should not be allowed to discriminate. A private employer should be able to exercise whatever perspective they have in their private actions, so long as they don't harm. We're not entitled to a job in this country. We aren't.
Right.
I'm sorry, you're not entitled to a job. We should all want everyone in our community to be gainfully employed so that they can support themselves and their families, but you're not entitled to a job from anyone.
Right, and if
so,
you're not qualified for that job, you get the job just because you're the right sex, you're the right color, you're left-handed, you're homosexual, you got three eyes, or
well,
whatever.
Well, actually, the government is far worse at that than private people. Private people tend to find ways to get around that. The government absolutely hires people all the time who are completely unqualified based on some quota system they have, and it's crazy. It's destructive and it's dysfunctional. I don't believe that our government should be allowed to discriminate, because we are all the government, by the people, for the people, of the people. But private actors, private corporations, they should be allowed to discriminate. You should be allowed to smoke in a private if you want to. I don't smoke. I've never smoked. I get a headache every time I'm around smoke. But I don't see how you can tell. If I wanted to open a bar where people can go inside and smoke, well, I should be allowed to do that. I don't see where the government gets off telling me that I can't, but that all falls back to universal health care.
Well, some companies, they won't hire you if you smoke.
Right, and you can do that. They can discriminate against you that way, can't they? There's no law against that, because we've all decided that smoking is bad, and it is bad. Smoking is bad for you, but we sell it. Why is that legal, and why isn't marijuana legal? I mean, why is alcohol legal?
Don't even get me started on that one, but I mean, no.
I mean, it makes no sense. It's arbitrary.
Well, whether you like to smoke or whether you like to drink, you like to do this, you like to inject heroin into your eyeball, okay, that's your decision to make. That should not be the government's decision whether you drink or you smoke or any of that. That's your decision to make, right, wrong, good, bad, or indifferent. And if you're going to inject heroin in your eyeball and, you know, you OD and die, well, you're the only one to blame. You can't blame society. It is a tragedy, but you can't blame the government. You can't blame society. You can't You can't blame ICE or, you know, the drug enforcement agencies.
Well, blaming really is not the issue. But here's the thing. Rather than this war on drugs, why don't we declare a war on mental health? Why don't we declare a war on addiction as a disease process? Because the money we dumped into trying to prevent people from engaging in these practices that have been going on since the beginning of time, there are some people who are just going to gravitate towards substance and use substance to their detriment. I think it's genetic at some level, and it's learned at other levels. But we're losing that war. Why don't we just turn around and put all that energy into mental health, which, by the way, is the answer to our gun control problem, not limiting the First Amendment. It is addressing mental health issues and providing services, meaningful treatment for people who have mental health issues early, before they get to the point that they go out and buy a weapon and shoot a bunch of people.
Well, yeah, I mean, you look at all the people like your gangs. Obviously, I'm going to go ahead and say that, you know, some of these guys they got to be a little mentally ill because they indiscriminately, you know, do drive-by shootings and they'll kill anybody at a drop of a hat. They don't care, but they don't get their guns through the government. They get them through the black market. And that's another thing that people don't understand. I mean, there's a black market out there. You can put all the restrictions on guns you want to, but,
that
you know,
really
that black, yeah, no,
there,
not do, and
there are
you,
far many... Many more people. There are far more people who own weapons responsibly and use them responsibly. They far outnumber the individuals who – now, there are accidental shootings every year, but there are accidents in every walk of life. So
you can walk out of your house, trip, and fall, hit your head just right, and that's it. You're done.
There's this idea that we're guaranteed safety and that the government can regulate safety is absolutely ridiculous, and it's also the vehicle by which we are absolutely throwing away our civil liberties one after the other. But when you don't address you don't provide services for people, you don't address the mental health issues, and we don't provide opportunities for people because we're working hard in our communities to reach out to everyone, not the government. I wish the government was like a hundredth of the size it is now, and let us all fend for ourselves, because I think the good people will rise up to the top and the bad people can just take a hike.
Well, that's another problem right there. I mean, this government is just far too big. And
it's huge.
That's what makes it even more difficult
it has to justify its own existence. So every year it gets bigger. How many people? Here's one of my big
pet peeves. Your tax bill gets bigger, too, because of it.
But look at my pet peeve, right? This whole idea that, the government's too big and we need to make it smaller, but not with my job. How many people now work for the government? How many people now work for the government because the government pays far better and offers far better benefits than the working man out here who has no safety net to fall on? When did that become America, that my tax dollars have to pay taxes to go support someone who now has a lifestyle three times better than mine? Because they're living off the tax dollar, and all of these people are screaming for smaller government, but as long as it's not their job, don't take their job, because their job is, you know, it's essential.
You're right. You're absolutely
need to connect the dots. As Americans, we stopped connecting the dots a long time ago because we stopped thinking for ourselves and we started listening to all these ridiculous news agencies and reading the mainstream media that tells us what to think. And we no longer think for ourselves.
I go nuts on the news. You can never get news on the news. I lost.
No news, just stories.
Exactly. And people, they go on Facebook and all this. They don't read the article. They just read the headline. The headline never is in the article. It's never there. And, you know, I lost respect for the media. I was 6 or 7 years old. I still remember this day explicitly. It was 1972. I know that's when I first learned about the PLO and Yasser Arafat, because my mom was getting ready to go to a PTA meeting. She's going back and forth from the bathroom to her bedroom, and I was watching a little TV in her bedroom. And then it went on, and I was asking her questions. And, you know, I remember that because the PLO and Yasser Arafat was in the news every day since then, so you couldn't help but, you know, learn his name. But they came on to a local, another story, local story, and I'm sitting there and I'm going, Mom, this guy's lying. She goes, oh, no, 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 they're the newscasters. They don't lie. They deliver. I said, Mom, this man is lying. She goes, no, they don't do that. They're delivering the news. And to this day, I have yet to have respect for the media. You give me the truth, you give me the news, and I'll give you my respect. But when I'm lied to every time I turn on that friggin' box, no, I can't respect that. I can't do it. I can't watch the news anymore.
I watch it for entertainment. We watch and laugh at it.
Right, you know, but I mean, and I hate to do a cheap plug here, but, you know, I've met a lot of good broadcasters and a lot of good friends on Blog Talk Radio, and this is where you're actually getting the news, because you're listening to real Americans talking about real American issues. You're not going to get that on the mainstream media. You're not going to get that. You're going to get that in shows like this, and you don't have to go to Blog Talk Radio. There's plenty of internet radio. There's plenty of this. There's plenty of stuff out there. You just have to look for it. But nobody wants to go out and actually research it. They just want all the information spoon-fed to me. They don't want to read the article. They just want to read the headline. Now I've got all the information I need. Now I'm educated. No, you're not.
Well, I think people need to realize that there's always something. I remind myself this all the time, that I can form an opinion, but I'm always willing to adjust that opinion if more information comes in that I find reliable. There are a few things in life that I absolutely made up my mind on. There are absolutely some things in life I've made up my mind about, and you're never going to change my mind about them. But there are most things, I think we all have to realize, we don't ever really know anything. And until you realize, or until you're willing to accept that you don't know everything, and you're never going to know everything, and you never know everything about one thing, then you can learn. And you can continue to evolve and learn. But people just don't, they want to be comfortable in this one very narrow position. And people always say that, you know, don't argue with Nanine because you'll never win. And my point is, well, it's not my fault that you don't understand that you have to actually make a compelling argument to convince me. I'm not just going to surrender my opinion because you tell me to. So if you want me to agree with you, you better be prepared to convince me. And if you can't convince me, that's not my fault. That's your fault.
Exactly.
You didn't do it.
Yeah, you want me to believe what you have to say. Well, then, you know, I'm the kind of guy that you tell me the sky is blue, well, I'm going to go outside and I'm going to check. And if that sky is any other color than blue, I'm going to come back to you and demand an explanation. Why did you tell me that sky was blue? So when I watch something on TV, I have to go through, you know, hours of